I'm Morgan Springer from Next and the New England News Collaborative. Alison Bechdel is a popular American cartoonist. She's perhaps best known for her graphic memoir called Fun Home, a family tragicomic, which was later adapted into a Tony Award-winning musical. She's also a recipient of the MacArthur Genius Grant. Alison's new book is called The Secret to Superhuman Strength. It's about exercise and the new fitness trends Alison picks up with each decade. It's also about transcending. She pushes to excel as an athlete, cartoonist, and partner, and she tries to find a way past her ego and fear of death to a state of being. Alison joins us now from her home in Vermont. Welcome to Next.
Hi. Thanks, Morgan.
So I'm kind of embarrassed to say it took me a little while to realize that while this memoir is about exercise and the different trends and activities you've done over time, it's not exactly the main point of the book, right?
That's true. Exercise ended up being sort of a lens or a way in for me to talk about stuff that is a little less concrete. I've always loved exercise, but not just for the physical benefits and the physical experience, but because of the way it calms my mind down and the way it gives me a glimpse of just getting outside of myself and quieting down my noisy brain.
Yeah, and it seems like it's like exercise in the book was like the house, the structure, and then inside were all these other questions that you were wrestling with, like how you relate to other people, your purpose in life, and then like your spiritual and creative process. I do want to talk about exercise, though. We're going to talk about the other things, but one of the things that's interesting about the exercise trends that span your life is that we get this sense of like exercise trends as a whole. When you were a kid, what did exercise look like in the 60s?
It looked very different than it does now. When I was a kid growing up in central Pennsylvania, there just was nothing like what children have today. Certainly not for girls. And even for boys, there was not much beyond Little League. We were just left to our own devices for long swaths of time. But that was all starting to change when I was a kid. You know, exercise really wasn't something people did before around the time I was born. I was born in 1960. You know, people used to just do stuff. They would, you know, wring their clothes through their wringer washer, or they'd go harpoon things. They didn't need to get exercise as a separate activity. So that's kind of a modern phenomenon, and it's kind of paralleled my lifespan. And as exercise came along, I started doing it.
Yeah, you started running as a kid, and it didn't sound like anyone else really around you was doing that. So what did your family and neighbors think?
They thought I was nuts. You know, I lived in a small farming town, and I'd go running out into the fields, and these farmers would see me, and they just did not know what I was doing. People would tease me and harass me, and people didn't do that. Certainly, girls didn't do that on their own back then.
Mm. Yeah, there weren't even sports bras, right? I remember
right.
You saying that in the book.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I had to wear these like flimsy little everyday bras from Sears. That was not good. Yeah, the sports bra was not invented until the 80s.
That's incredible.
Let's just all have a moment of thanks for the women who invented that thing.
Yeah, so grateful. And so then as you're doing research into the history that was the backdrop of your life, and you kind of get this bird's eye view of these trends that you're a part of, what was that like?
It was interesting. I, you know, as a memoirist, as someone who writes about my own life, I'm always kind of looking over my own record, looking at my diary and my teenage diaries, and sort of trying to zoom out from that and see if there are patterns, see what kind of larger narrative there might be. And so it was kind of cool, seeing the way the culture touched my personal life and the way I was participating in these things, along with everyone else who was jogging and doing martial arts and doing yoga back in the day before we had a yoga studio on every corner.
I want to talk about death. You've got this great sentence in the book. You write, the thing about changing your life is that change means moving on, and moving on leads essentially to one place, the grave. And, you know, I found myself wondering throughout reading and looking at your amazing images, like, how much were you consciously thinking about death and avoiding it during all of these different exercise phases you went through?
Well, I think about death kind of a lot, maybe slightly more than the average person, having grown up in a funeral home. I've known for a long time that almost all of my anxieties, all of anyone's anxieties, can pretty much be boiled down to fear of death. Like, that's at the bottom of everything. So I do feel like it would be nice to sort of come to terms with that, so it wasn't always lurking there and taking your energy and, you know, causing anxiety. I don't know how well that's going. It's, you know, it's a lifelong project.
So you weren't thinking like, okay, I got to just like run one more mile because I'll live X minutes longer.
No, I'm not that hardcore. I sort of give the impression of myself as a driven maniac, but I'm not. I exercise because I really love it. You know, I'm not going out there and hating it. If I hated it, I wouldn't do it. If I have any message that I'm trying to impart with this book, it's that exercise should be done only for the pleasure of it and not for any other reason, or it's just not fun.
Yeah, in terms of death, it seems like your spiritual work is kind of working to accept death and suffering. And what pushed you to be like, okay, I've got to be okay with this death thing?
You know, can I just say, I feel sort of ridiculous talking about death in the abstract. You know, I have a lot of friends who are actually facing death, who are ill, and I've just been thinking about how idiotic I sound rattling on about, you know, mortality when it's really not something I am immediately grappling with. I do want to understand it. I do want to come to terms with it, but it's very different to do that intellectually than for people who are actually facing real death. I mean, like imminent death.
Yeah. Has that made you feel like, well, I guess I'll ask you first, do you think like I'm misunderstanding what you were wrestling with as a part of the book, or has your feelings about your own writing changed as you've like been like, what, there, you know, I have friends who are wrestling with this right now?
No, you understood the book properly. It's only since I've been out talking about the book that I'm starting to realize I sound kind of glib in the way I'm talking about death when it's not a simple abstract idea. It's a real thing.
My guest is cartoonist Alison Bechdel. She created the graphic memoir Fun Home, which was adapted into a Tony Award-winning musical. Today we're talking about her new book, The Secret to Superhuman Strength, which came out this month. Alison, I want to talk a bit about Vermont and New England. Now, you moved to Vermont after you got a fan letter. Share the story behind that fan letter and what brought you suddenly to Vermont.
Oh, dear. I have sort of been fascinated with New England since I was a teenager. It always just seemed like an amazing place. I kind of knew I wanted to live there. I loved the idea that it was colder and there was lots of snow. And I did attend college in Western Massachusetts for 2 years. But then I went other places. I went to the Midwest, and I was living in Minneapolis in 1990 when I got a fan letter from someone who had read one of my cartoon books, and we started this flirtation, and within like a few months I had actually moved to Vermont because partly because I was genuinely interested in this woman, but also the idea of Vermont really beckoned. I loved the Twin Cities, but I didn't like living out on the prairie where it was so flat. I didn't see mountains ever, and that really bothered me. So I moved to Vermont, which has got mountains built right into its very name.
You capture this moment when you're a teenager, you're flipping through a 1976 L.L. Bean catalog, and you write in the book that you found, quote, a dimension called New England. And I read that and I was like, whoa, dimension, that's a big word. But that you're kind of capturing that in what you're saying, like you just had this, you felt this draw and you had this idea of what New England represented.
I did. And it was largely due to L.L. Bean, as you pointed out. It just seemed kind of magical to me. I don't know why.
Has it maintained its magic for you?
It has, and then some. I love living in Vermont. In fact, when I got here, that crazy long-distance relationship, as you might expect, did not really work out. But I was so happy to be in Vermont that I stayed here, and I've been here ever since.
Eventually, you meet Holly, and I just got to say, it's hard to read this book and not love Holly. I may be over-glorifying here, but there was, it's almost like she helped save you from yourself. Maybe that's not quite right. Maybe it's that you were in a...
I think that's right? True.
Really? Say more about that.
So Holly is very in touch with her own joy. And she keeps trying to get me to also just have more joy in my life and stop struggling so much with everything. So that's been a really good influence. It's been also hard because I'm so used to struggling, and sometimes it feels annoying to have someone tell you to stop struggling. But over the years, she has definitely helped me to just be happier and more positive in my life.
And I understand it took you about 8 years to write this book, and that a lot of the drawing happened in the past year. And a lot of help came from Holly. She would fill in the colors in your drawings. What was that like to reach this point where you're now sharing this process together?
You know, it was really fun. It was challenging, too, because I'm not used to collaborating. I'm used to doing everything myself. But I was really lucky to have her help on this project. You know, she's an artist. She was able to pitch in and do this quite intense work binge with me, where she was, coloring as I was inking. And that's what we did during the pandemic, which was kind of cool. You know, the world was going to hell in a handbasket, but we had this project we were both super focused on, which actually was fun. So I wasn't like feeling the anxiety and dread that I think a lot of people were feeling during COVID. I was just kind of happily working away with Holly.
You know, through a lot of the book, the feeling I was maybe getting through your writing was struggling to find balance in many different aspects of your life. But then once we get to the last few years, it just starts to feel more peaceful. And then even more so during the pandemic. Do you feel like that's an accurate characterization?
I do. And, you know, it was sort of, I'm writing about my actual life as it's unfolding, which is a curious exercise. And of course, I want the book to end on a positive note. I want to, you know, I'm writing a book about transcendence and, you know, getting beyond the self and being in the flow. So I was kind of setting myself up to try and make that happen. Part of the trick about all these things, though, is that you can't make transcendence happen. You can't make yourself feel, you know, grief or love. Those things, you have to allow them to happen. And I do think I started to let that stuff happen. I do think I moved through something, you know, that I did get to an easier relationship with my creativity and with, you know, just the way I live my life.
Yeah, you say right toward the end, the only thing to transcend is the idea that there's something to transcend, which seems to capture just what you were talking about.
Yeah. I mean, this all sounds sort of trite when you say it. You know, it's all about being in the present moment. We know that intellectually, but to really feel that it's a transformative experience. And it's not like you can always stay in that state. It's, you know, you're lucky if you can be in the present moment for 1 second. But I do think that's where that's ultimately what I discovered.
I've got one more question for you, and it's maybe a little cheesy, but you did call the book The Secret to Superhuman Strength, so I'm wondering, have you discovered the secret?
Well, you know, it's kind of what we were just talking about. In fact, my book is launching on May the 4th. I think that's a felicitous date because it's Star Wars Day. May the 4th be with you. And I've been thinking about the thing Yoda says. You know, Yoda says, there is no try, only do. Or if you would rather have a advertising slogan, just do it, you know? Stop suffering and whining and just do it. Stop trying. Do it.
Alison Bechdel's new novel is The Secret to Superhuman Strength. She's the author of the popular book Fun Home. Alison, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thanks, Morgan.
Listen to Next wherever you get your podcasts or at nextnewengland.org.